Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Guter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. I'm your host Matthew Karagic and it is a pleasure to have your company from wherever you're listening to this around the world. It is the first international break and let's just say there are some teams that are thrilled that the break has come as they need to recalibrate after a tricky first month and a bit, whilst others are on cloud nine near the top of the table and feeling really good about their prospects as the season progresses. Match day 5 was a ridiculous match day. In general, we saw one of the silliest games of football, which we'll talk about in just a moment. We saw disappointing results for teams that were expecting to get on the winners' lists, and so much more. It was so Zweite Bundesliga, and we were here to enjoy it. Let's start our escapade with Magdeburg and Hertha, the 10-goal game on Saturday afternoon in front of just under 27,000 at the MDCC Arena. This game was ridiculous, it was silly, it was almost unnecessary. One thing it was definitely was a defensive disaster class from both sides, but in the end, it was Magdeburg who came from behind 4 separate occasions to get the 3 points and remain in that top hunt. Hertha got off to a great start though, brilliant pressing, something they did very well last week against Greuther Fürth. Tabakovic leading from the front. They win possession back and Fabian Riiser scores just 70 seconds in. The lead lasts no more than 5 minutes. Silas Naka, who was really good as a substitute last week in the game against St. Pauli, he gets on the board and it becomes 1-1. Marvin Winkler made it 2. Again, Tabakovic doing really good work. He held off Daniel Haber. Great pass to find Winkler, and he gets his second in consecutive games. But again, the lead not lasting particularly long. Just before the break, Lucas Schüler getting his 4th goal of the campaign. He is now equal with Robert Glatzel and Cedric Toikert, second most goals in the division. But credit to Hertha, they would find a resolution just minutes before the end of the first half. Haris Tabakovic getting his first goal of the game and made it 3-2 for Hertha heading into the break. But again, you know, Hertz's inability to really hold on became quite the issue. Jason Checker from distance making it 3-3. Tabakovic made it 4-3 with thanks to Privoyak's header to find Tabakovic, and then Tabakovic heading it past Dominic Ryman. But again, couldn't hold a lead. 3 minutes later, Leon Bell-Bell gets his first goal of the campaign, playing in a bit of a different role to what we normally see. We saw Christian Tietz really switch it up with his role. They playing a bit further forward as well. Excuse me. And a lot of interchange with him and Elan Khoury. They were constantly switching flanks. We did see Bell-Bell operate a lot more on the right-hand side, being a bit more inverted, whipping those balls in from that side. But at 4-4, you almost felt, well, how long until Hertha get the lead again? And the thing is, they just couldn't find a way through, and Magdeburg just seemed, once it got to 4-4, as ridiculous as this will sound, they seemed the more likely to get the next goal, and they did so, and what a goal it was. Great play from Conde to progress the ball forward, find Lucas Schüler. Really poor defending from Hertha to leave Mohamed Elan Khoury all on his own outside the box, and you just don't think he's going to shoot. I don't think Tjaak Ernst as well in goal for Hertha was really thinking that he was going to shoot, and what a shot it was. It had that just nice bit of dip, you know, when the ball doesn't really, it's almost like motionless in the air, and Ernst really had no chance. It was a sensational goal and his first goal of the campaign. And really from there, you felt Hertha were going to have the response, and they just couldn't find that clinical touch despite scoring 4 times. They really struggled to get on top after Magdeburg got that 5th goal, and they would eventually get a 6th. Just a brilliant, you know, again, just open Hertha up, and Ahmet Arslan gets his 2nd goal of the campaign, the substitute, and it's 3 well-deserved points for Magdeburg. I think the one thing that we can take out of this game for Hertha is offensively, they've found the mojo. 9 goals in the last 2 games, it's better than the 0 in the first 3. They're pressing a lot better without the ball, especially in the opposition's defensive third. One thing that we saw a lot of is they were able to create turnover, created opportunities, and you know, if you look at two of the four goals they scored, especially the two of the three in the first half, they came from turnover in Magdeburg's defensive third, and they were able to quickly make smart decisions, get it to the right areas, and what they've seen is that in the system they're currently running, they can actually trust Tabakovic, who's not entirely quick per se, but he does his defensive jobs really well. He forces defenses, or those on the ball, to make really questionable decisions, and it's led to goals. So they'll be happy that in the front third, with Winkler, with Riza, that front three seems really set. It's defensively that against a much more offensively potent team like Magdeburg compared to Greuther Fürth last week, they couldn't get away. Excuse me, this cough is going to persist, by the way, so do bear with me. They were found out quite quickly. Transitional play, they really struggled. I don't think the midfield and defensive setups really conduced to protecting Hertha at the defensive end. And you see, Leissner and Kempf really struggled. I thought Kempf was just borderline atrocious. He made a terrible error for one of the goals in the game. And yeah, it's definitely something they're going to have to work on. They clearly don't have what they call the favourable mix. The problem is they just don't really have anyone else that they can bring in. In my opinion, they did put Gegner into the game in the second half, but the damage at that point kind of just intensified. So look, at the end of the day, I think there are positives for Hertha. The front three is working really well, but defensively they were awful, and striking the balance is going to be key for them. They've got a really interesting opponent in Eintracht Braunschweig when we come back from the international break. We know how difficult Braunschweig are going to be, and it'll be interesting to see if they persist with that sort of high press game plan, because it did work for them. They were impressive, so we'll see. But there's a lot to like with what there's improvement with what Hertha are doing. It's just defensively, they're not going to concede six goals every game, so there's things to work on. Magdeburg will feel really positive though. Offensively, they are brilliant to watch. Once they were able to bypass the pressing, there was lots of space for their creative three in Schuler, Atik and Checker to really operate. Tietz, it's quite funny, Christian Tietz post-game said that he would much prefer a 1-0 win, which is fair enough. Coaches don't want to see their teams concede four goals in a game. But Lucas Schuler, who obviously was one of the goal scorers, mentioned that he would much prefer the 6-4s, and I think as a neutral, the 6-4 game is much more interesting. They've got Schalke away, and that's a top Spiel game on the 16th, and that's going to be a fascinating game with how Schalke are performing at the moment. Magdeburg, you'd have to say, going as favourites. They'll feel really comfortable with the way they're playing. If they can tighten up defensively, they're going to be really hard to beat. It wouldn't surprise me. And their next three, Schalke, Paderborn and Nürnberg, all very winnable games with how all three teams are performing at the moment. Let's move to the Volksparkstadion, Hamburg hosting Hansa Rostock. Both teams have had really positive starts to the season, but there was the potential of this being a bit of a banana skin game for Hamburg. Last time that these two sides met at the Volksparkstadion, Hansa came away with a 1-0 win thanks to a 94th minute goal from Kevin Schumacher. That was a game that Hamburg completely dominated but didn't make the most of their chances. Would it be different this time around? Yes it would, because Hamburg come away with a 2-0 victory. Goals either side of half-time. Ludovic Rice scoring in the 5th minute of added time in the first half, and then on the 48th minute, as silly as that all sounds, Laszlo Benes, who's had an unbelievable start to the season, he scores goal number 5 for the campaign, which means he is the top scorer in the Zweite Bundesliga at the moment. They almost had a third through Robert Glatzel, but his effort wrestling the woodwork and going out of play. It was a really good performance from Hamburg. We knew coming into this game that Hansa were going to be quite defensive. They were going to have to be very efficient going forward. They were sitting quite deep And, you know, really allowing Hamburg to have quite a lot of the ball in terms of the season. It's one of Hamburg's heaviest possession games so far. You know, what we've seen from them is normally around in the mid-50s, but this week, you know, this weekend, 66% on the ball, you know, 18 shots on goal to 7 with, you know, very good pass accuracy of 87%. So, you know, it really, you know, allowed Rice, Benesch, that midfield to really to get on top. It's also the another clean sheet for Hamburg. They got to welcome Sebastian Schonlau back for the first time this season, and he was quite good alongside Dennis Hansi Kardunic. So this is the team that they want to go forward with. It, you know, it's a really good mix. They've got really strong midfield play with Rice returning. He had the goal and he assisted the Benesch goal. You know, obviously would love to have seen more output from Robert Glatzel. But there's a lot to like with the Hamburg mix. You know, they like to get those overlaps. And we got to see it, especially on the left-hand side with Muheim and Dompe. Those good transition moments where they can get the ball into the box. We know Glatzel has improved quite a lot from his from when he started at Hamburg. And, yeah, look, you know, they've got heaps of weapons. It's, you know, what a luxury you can have Emmanuel Farai, who's coming back from injury. Königsdorfer, Ustin Ali as well. So, yeah, they're definitely building something there. You know, to keep the clean sheet was quite good. Limited the amount of big chances. Only two of them Hansa Rostock had throughout the game. But, yeah, look, this game easily could have been a lot uglier. We know how great Marcus Kolke has been over the past 18 months. And, again, another stellar display from him throughout this game, making countless saves. And it did feel like as the first half continued, it was going to be one of those games where Kolke was going to just be the man, be the goalkeeper who was going to thwart everything and anything that came. And to be honest, it was a bit of a soft goal to concede. I had to get beaten at his near post. But, you know, if you look at how the move began, and, you know, Hansa were deep in their own offensive third. They were really looking to at least threaten Daniel Hoyer Fernandez, but turnover, and Hamburg was so quick to transition. And look, it helps to have really quick, pacey players like you know, Jean-Luc Dompe on the left in particular to really progress the transition, get the ball forward, and it's his pass to find Rice, who does so well, turns inside, and it almost looked like a scuff shot, if anything. But it was a fantastic, in the end, it was good enough to beat Marcus Kolke. But those two goals either side of halftime really just dictated the momentum. You know, Rostock really didn't have a whole lot to really speak for. In the second half, they were marginally better, I would say. But they just, yeah, they just, the challenge with sitting deep and especially not, you know, not having the lead of the game state, which they really struggled with, you know, it can be really hard because it allows Hamburg to really dictate how the game is going to progress. And, you know, even though, you know, Hamburg are probably not, you know, they're still pretty strong side on the ball, they're finding it, trying to be a bit more versatile in the way they progress forward. And, yeah, I just don't think Hansa really did enough to challenge the, to challenge Hamburg defensively. And, yeah, I think there's a bit of talk also with, you know, how sustainable is this footballing model for Hansa? And at the moment, it works really well with the squad they've got. You know, the system makes sense. They've got two very interesting attacking options in Pereira and Pruger. But, you know, they were left to really to struggle. You know, I think Hansa were probably a bit better when Christian Konsombi came on. They seemed a bit more offensively versatile. So there's plenty for them to think about. It wasn't a bad performance from Rostock, but I think more of a case that Hamburg really asserted their dominance early and made it really difficult for Hansa to get a grip on the game. So Rostock, their return game will be against Fortuna Düsseldorf at home. Hamburg will make the journey south to the Saarland when they take on Elversberg. To round out Group 1, let's head off to Düsseldorf. Fortuna Düsseldorf hosted Karlsruhe on Friday night. Two sides who pretty high hopes heading into this campaign, and there would only be one winner, and that would be Fortuna Düsseldorf. But it all started well for Karlsruhe. A really good, well-worked set piece from the team. Philipp Heiser put the ball into the box, initially not cleared, and Fabian Schleusner was on hand to put it home. His third goal of the season on the third minute. Initially not given, but correctly overturned. But the lead lasted all but 11 minutes. And Yannick Engelhardt, who was just unbelievably good in this game, he got his first goal from Fortuna Düsseldorf. He joined from Freiburg's second team in the summer. He's been really good since they've implemented him into that central midfield area, especially on and off the ball. He's very versatile. We'll get to him in a minute. Excellent play. Gets the goal 1-1, and there's a scene where he's celebrating in front of had a section of the stadium with the youth players, which was pretty cool to see. Fortuna were really in control of this game for the majority. They really, you know, bossed Karlsruhe around, which was quite a surprise. But they ended up 1-1 at the break. Second half, really, Düsseldorf asserted their will and eventually got the second goal. Really good transition play from Fortuna Düsseldorf, starting with Engelhardt, and in the end, Christos Tsolis, the Greek midfielder who they signed from Norwich in his second game. He started. It's a brilliant goal. He cuts inside Sebastian Jung. Jerome Gondorf doesn't react quick enough, and Tsolis with an excellent curling effort to beat Patrick Drouet in goal. Just moments later, it would be 3. Again, really too easy when Karlsruhe got really narrow defensively for this particular scenario. The ball trickles out to Zimmermann. He's trying to play a ball in. It deflects off Vanicek and into the back of the net to make it 3-1. Karlsruhe did have a couple of chances. Their best one through to Dennis Burnic, who came on as a second-half substitute. But Carsten Meyer was there. And Carsten Meyer had a really good game once again. He's had a strong start to the season. So there's a lot to like with how he has performed so far this season. I think they're a bit more aggressive, Karlsruhe. As we mentioned, Engelhardt was really good. It's interesting to see that they played, you know, sort of a different look. You know, Johannessen in particular, who they brought in, the Icelandic guy, midfielder. Appelkamp was playing a bit more central and allowing Tsolis and Klaus to really operate on the wings. But certainly opened up in the second half when they brought on Emmanuel Ayor for Nicolas Gavoui. Ayor is a bit more, he's not really left back, but in this particular game he was playing left back and really felt that he was able to provide additional overlaps for Tsolis. I really liked what Engelhardt did. He was really good on the ball. Statistically showed, 89% pass completion, created the two opportunities, had the goal in the first half, which all stemmed from really good pressing, dispossessed Jerome Gondorf and took it all the way. He's one of those young players that they wanted to integrate into the squad when they signed him, and he's really competing with Tanaka for that sort of number 6 role. Although Tanaka can play as an 8, it does seem that Daniel Tuna wants to play with a little bit more flexibility in midfield. Tanaka is more of a deep lying midfielder, and I guess they want someone who can get a bit forward, create more numbers. We also got to see Zibert get his first start as well, and I thought he was quite good, quite solid alongside Yuri de Vise. So there was plenty to like about what Fortuna Düsseldorf have done. It means that they're fourth heading into the international break. They're defending really well. They're scoring goals, and they atoned for the Paderborn game over the last 2 weeks. They've scored 8 goals in that time. Karlsruhe, on the other hand, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. We were sort of in love with them early on, but they just they really struggled to make the most of their opportunities in this game. Substitutes had relative impacts depending on Igor Matanovic is still getting into the mix. They're still trying to figure out how he fits alongside, Schleusner or whether it's Zuzvatse, Stindl. There's a lot to like in the midfield mix. We've talked about the midfield mix quite a bit. But I think defensively they were under a lot of pressure for the majority of the game. When Düsseldorf were able to transition, it became very clear that at times the midfield and defensive gaps were far too great, and it was asking a lot of Gondorf to to cover. And the second goal is a great example of where, you know, Karlsruhe are really looking for the second goal. They're being quite aggressive. But when the turnover happens, you can see they're still pretty well set up. They've got the four well in line. Gondorf is covering. But of the quickness of how, you know, Engelhardt was able to get the ball to Appelkamp, and in a situation where Tolitz is, you know, he's not really in a position where he can cross. You know, Jung's covered out that sort of run to the byline quite well, but, you know, Tolitz does an excellent job to cut in and score an excellent goal. So sometimes you just have to tip your cap with that one. So, yeah, I think overall, you know, Fortuna 10 points from their opening five games. They'll be quite happy with that. They're only 3 points away from Hamburg at the top. Karlsruhe 7 points from five. They probably would have expected a little bit more, but it's not the be-all and end-all. It's, you know, we're still a long way to go in this season. So they've got their big game against Kaiserslautern on Saturday when we return from the international break. That's a big derby game. Those teams not particularly fond of each other. Dusseldorf, on the other hand, they will be heading to Rostock also on Saturday afternoon. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll break down our Group 2 games, starting at the Eintracht Stadion when Eintracht Braunschweig hosted St. Pauli. It'd been quite some time since St. Pauli had found the back of the net in the Zweite Bundesliga, but they were hoping that would all change when they made the short journey to Braunschweig on Friday night. Braunschweig, on the other hand, well, they just beat, you know, they've had some pretty decent results, including that victory against Schalke. They were hoping to improve what had been an interesting start under Jens Hartl. It was a pretty dominant display early from St. Pauli, with chances aplenty through Elias Sard and Marcel Hartl, who were undoubtedly two of the better players for St. Pauli going forward. Again, they still haven't really figured out what their best defensive three is. We felt last week that it might have improved, but of course no goal scoring output. But ultimately, they would be forced to wait as the first half drew to be 0-0. Second half again, St. Pauli really got on top early. They were winning the midfield battle with Marcel Hartl and Jackson Irvine. A good use of the wide players with Saliakas and Ritzka providing those overlaps. So it's quite interesting when they get to the offensive third. Saw this quite a few times throughout the game. They would get, you know, Ritzka to say invert, and then they'd have Ilias Sard playing a lot further wide. So that was quite interesting to see that they were trying different things to break down what was going to be a very heavily intensive low block played by Braunschweig. They did get their goal. Ilias Sard on, excuse me, I've lost my bearings, on 59 minutes. A good ball in from Jackson Irvine. And with Sard still had plenty to do. Dukes out the defender. And, you know, RTH, Ron Torben Hoffman, would be a bit annoyed that he was beaten at the near post. But St. Pauli won't care. They finally broke their duck. They really continued to hold serve. They had their opportunities to break through. Hartl had a great one just moments later to make it 2-0. But again, you know, the hard thing with having so many opportunities is that if you don't take them, you just invite that pressure. And as the game progressed, you know, Braunschweig weren't offering a whole lot in the final third for quite long periods of time. And we see this happen quite often in the Zweite Bundesliga. It happens in all football. If you just don't put your team, or if you don't put the opposition away, you invite that pressure. And, you know, Braunschweig, who, you know, only had two shots in the second half until then, they get their equalising goal through substitute Thore Johan Helgesen. He, in his intro, joining to the club the day before their window closed. You can call him Tor, but we'll try and get his name right. Helgesen with an excellent goal. There was a duel between Uja and Carol Metz. Metz wins it, but probably puts it in the worst place to header it clear. It's front and centre, and Helgesen just lashes at it, beating Nikolai Vasil, who until that point had only faced one shot on target throughout the game. Or hadn't actually faced a shot on target. That was the shot on target. Sorry. And that was the final result. Braunschweig had a really good patch. Excuse me. Had a really good patch. After the goal, they had the set-piece chance that went over the crossbar. But, you know, it's a good result for Braunschweig. They'll be really happy with it. They showed some glimpses. We got to see Florian Kruger make his return to the Zweite Bundesliga after a season in the Eredivisie. It's quite interesting when I was doing the mini preview on X, Twitter, whatever the hell it's called these days. I talked about how, you know, Braunschweig, with their front three in particular, they like to have a number 10 behind the two strikers, but it was interesting to see that Hartl completely changed that a little bit. He had Gomez playing on the left with Kruger on the right-hand side, Kaufmann coming off the bench. I think Kaufmann was quite solid in his introduction, but I think also Rittmuller was a bit better than Danilo Weber on the right-hand side. But yeah, not a terrible result for Braunschweig. I thought they defended quite well, considering St. Pauli really, again, high volume of shots on goal, you know, plenty of possession on the ball, which, you know, Braunschweig are happy to give up control of the game in a possession sense, if it means that in transition they can get out the back and, you know, get the ball to Uja. That's really where they want to operate in their own final third. So yeah, I think really disappointing for St. Pauli. You know, 7 points from their opening five games. And I saw Marcel Hartl say that post-game is not where they want to be. They're really disappointed with how the season has progressed. They are unbeaten with 2 wins and 3 draws, but ultimately it's not what they desire. What they will be hopeful for is that new signing Simon Soller, who joined on the deadline day, will be the offensive output that really fits the trio alongside Saad and Afellay. They want him to play as a number 9. Had really, you know, 5 really good seasons with Bochum in the Zweite Bundesliga and the Bundesliga. Has great experience in this division. He signs on a 2-year deal and, you know, really can give them that offensive punch. You know, he's a known goal getter in both divisions. So yeah, maybe he will be the solutions, because they've, you know, as well as Andreas Albers has provided as an offensive option as the number 9, he doesn't have any goals. And that's, you know, when your pay dirt is to find the back of the net and you're not doing that, and they've given him some decent opportunity, you just wonder. We suspect that when St. Pauli play Holstein Kiel, when they return from the international break, I'm guessing we're going to see Simon Zoller starting alongside Saad and Afellay. Braunschweig, as we mentioned, they're going to be playing Hertha. And that game will be also a World Feed game. So two very interesting encounters, and we'll see if Braunschweig can get their second win of the season. Let's turn our attention to what was the Topspiel game, a traditional battle between Kaiserslautern and Nürnberg. This was actually a really entertaining game between two sides that are on the up. Kaiserslautern had won back-to-back games, as had Nürnberg. So it was really built up to be a really fascinating encounter, and they did not disappoint with a game that was fascinating from the opening kickoff. Nürnberg started really positively. Benjamin Goller, who we talked about last week, who's really shown to be quite a very strong option for Christian Fiel. He made some really good impacts early, hit the post in the first half, had another really good opportunity to give Nürnberg the lead, but was unable to do so. The goals then came for Kaiserslautern, a rich former 3 goals in 11 minutes. And it started with an absolute weltie from Richmond Tashi. I mean, talk about scoring your first goal for your new club. A volley from outside the box, cannoning off the post, and in Christian Mateno made a really good attempt to save it, but it was just such a gorgeous shot, and he gave Kaiserslautern the lead. And then Timochar Puchas, the left back, he then hit an excellent volley from outside the box. Took a slight deflection off Jan Chimra, which caused Mateno to not get into the right position. Had there not been a deflection, I think Mateno probably would have saved it. But anyway, shot from range, it was driven, had plenty of power, and in the end deceived Nürnberg for 2. And then Pukas with an excellent assist for the 3rd. His cross finds Ragnar Ache, who's now got 4 goals. He's opening 5 games. He's proving to be every bit worth the million euros they paid for him. But there was a bit of silence towards the end of the first half when Lucas Schleimer got it to 3-1. And Nürnberg were really good in the second half. They had quite a bit of control in the game. substitutes were quite good. I thought Daferner, when he came on, had a real impact. Same with Uzun. And they were just a little bit unlucky. They had two goals taken away thanks to offside. The first one, Daferner playing Okunuki. I thought Okunuki was really good in this game as well. But he was, he was offside. Initially, not given until a further look. And then Daferner was the guilty party for the second offside goal. Uzun with an excellent ball to him. It was a bit of a scramble. Daferner then bundled the ball in, but eventually it was offside. And then Nürnberg went down to 10 men in the end when Matania fouled Terence Boyd. He basically tried to footy tackle him. It would have been interesting to see if Dr. Arnick had the referee had just played the advantage, because Boyd did put the ball in the back of the net. But eventually he didn't get the advantage there. So Matania was sent off. We did get to see Tim Handwerk play goalkeeper. They still had one more sub. So Handwerk played in goal for the last couple of minutes of the game. Really good performance for I thought both teams were really good in this game, and it almost seemed unfair that there had to be a loser. I think Nürnberg, especially in the second half, showed that they can, find multiple alternatives to be quite dangerous in the final third. Although the transitional play was quite good. But they just, they just were perhaps a little bit unlucky. I thought the second half, they just didn't have the luck. Sometimes you need a little bit of extra luck to get results against hard, strong defensive teams. And when you've got Kaiserslautern, who've got a two-goal cushion in the second half, and they're not going to be constantly looking to go forward, they're more or less trying to protect the lead. We see Nürnberg playing with high possession numbers again, which is what Fjell wants them to have. A lot of the ball, be dynamic and really, take advantage. And they did really good at attacking the spaces behind the wide midfield players, whether it's Zimmer or Pukas. It worked to their advantage. Goller got into really good positions. We saw Okunuki. They were a little bit better with Daferner up as the central option, so he was able to hold up the ball a little bit more. I think as disappointing as it would be for Nürnberg to not have come away with a point, which they could have had a case of taking a point in this game, you can see the signs of development. They are improving as a team. They're a lot more interesting in an attacking sense than they were last season under Klaus, under Weinziel, and even under Hecking. So they're okay. I think that they're a lot better than they've been over the past couple of seasons. But the lack of a goal was a real key of getting that second goal. And had they got it to 3-2, I think there would have been, it might have been an interesting challenge for Kaiserslautern, because not often have we seen them play with quite a big lead and having to hold on. So, Nürnberg, they've got the big derby game. They've got Greuther Fürth when they come back, which should be a fascinating encounter. Really is going to be a fun game. Very intense. Both teams coming off defeats. We'll talk about Fürth in Group 3. These games aren't particularly friendly at all. And same with Kaiserslautern. They're off to Karlsruhe in what should be a fascinating game. Two sides that similar spots on the table. Kaiserslautern have won now 3 in a row. So all the pressure is still on Karlsruhe, I think, in that game. Our final Group 2 game brings us to Kiel. Holstein Kiel hosting Paderborn. Two really interesting sides in the way that they want to play football, but also in terms of ambition. Paderborn were hopeful to continue the good form that they'd had over the past couple of seasons under Lukas Kwasniok. Marcel Rapp, potential hot seat situation. They expected better from them. It's quite interesting to see how they were going to go in this game. Before the game took place, there was protests from the Kiel fans, especially from the main ultras group. They were not particularly happy with how the club has been run over the recent duration, so lots of boos and whistles. But once the ball got rolling, it didn't get any better when Paderborn opened the lead on 12 minutes. Initially coming from the set piece, Kiel really unable to get rid of the danger. A Raphael Obermeyer with a bit of a loopy cross and didn't seem particularly dangerous. But Robert Leipertz was quick to be aware of it. He heads it home. And it is 1-0. He would leave this game before half-time with an injury. you know, Kiel were a bit slow out of the gates in the early stage of the first half, but once they got into action, they really, you know, put the pressure on Paderborn. They would get an equalising goal in 31 minutes. A wonderful cross in from Finn Porat. It does take a slight deflection, but the finish from Tom Ruoto was superb. A first-time effort, beating a stationary Jan Okut. There was not much he could have done about that. That's his first goal of the campaign. Paderborn thought they had taken the lead early in the second half when Jan Okut's long ball found Sir Lloyd Conte, who did excellently well to chip Timon Weiner. However, only just Conte's run initially, you know, he just couldn't get back onside quick enough, and the goal was taken away. A bit of a disappointment because it would have been partially deserved and what had eventually become quite an even game. Unfortunately for them, for Paderborn, they would concede shortly after, just after the hour mark. Kiel would actually take the lead. Turnover in midfield and quick thinking from Steven Skrzybski to score just inside the offensive half, catching Hoot off his line and into the back of the net. What is it about long-range goals and goalkeepers being in positions they, you know, of exposure? We saw it when Branimir Hrgota did that against Kiel a few match days ago. Killed Steven Skrzybski, returning the favour at Paderborn's expense. Paderborn thought they had the equalising goal in stoppage time, and it was Conte again in his effort hitting the post, and somehow it treaded the line. It treaded that line so finely, and Avina was able to get the ball off the line and into safe hands. Extraordinary how that ball did not cross the goal line. Paderborn thought they had, but of course we don't have goal line technology. We only have the video assistant referee. And there's an excellent camera view on the goal line showing the ball had part of the board crossed the line, but not all of it in its entirety. What does this mean in terms of how the season is progressing? Well, for Kiel, they are second. 4 wins in their opening 5 games. They're only a point behind Hamburg, who, you know, one of the few sides who have not fallen to defeat. 9 goals and 6 conceded. It's been a positive start. The new signings are fascinating. Ruoto has been outstanding. He's been such a joy to watch on the left-hand side, and really it's the young players who are driving it. Philip Zander has been magnificent in midfield throughout this season, and you know it's clear that he's really thrived with the captain's armband. We talk about players who get the armband and they're just not able to cope with the pressures. It's a lot of responsibility, and you know, some people are really good at it, some not so much, but I've been really impressed with how he's really handled the responsibility this season. Even though Shuto Machino and Benedict Pickler didn't get on the score sheet, they were very dangerous throughout the game. Machino had a good chance early on in the game to get on the score sheet. But yeah, look, they've found a system that really works. The young players are driving this team forward. We're seeing more of Finn Porat, who I thought was good in this game as well. Kleiner Beckel, Marvin Schultz. So heading into this season, there was a lot of the unknowns of, you know, they were a bit of an older squad. It wasn't really the kinds of players that Marcel Rapp wanted. There was frustration with the way they were playing and not really getting the best out of a team that clearly has a system designed to score tons of goals. They're a fantastic offensive team to watch, but on the defensive end, they've been a bit suspect. Better in this game. Even when Paderborn threw the kitchen sink at them, they were able to hold steadfast. And amazing how the switch of goalkeeper from Thomas Dana to Timon Weiner has really worked out for them. It's one of those things where you can be under quite a lot of pressure to make the change, especially 3 games in. You know, and it seemed a bit hasty when they did it for the game against Schalke, but it does seem that potentially Weiner might be just a better fit for what they want to do in possession, but also is just in better form. And, you know, you've got to go with the higher hand. We saw with Kaiserslautern, which I forgot to mention in the previous game, they went with Julian Kral over the returning Andreas Luther, who was healthy for this game. Even Dirk Schuster mentioned about, you know, Luther's our number one, and then he started Kral. So, you know, you've got to go with the higher hand when it comes to goalkeepers, and Weiner's been a decent addition. For Paderborn, it's been a tough start for them. 4 points from their opening 5 games. They're 16th heading into the international break. The defence has really struggled, and it does seem that it's going to take a bit of time. They really miss Marvin Pieringer. We saw Felix Platter leading the line in this game and was really not effective. When Conte came on, they certainly had a bit more versatility. They obviously a bit more pace, and if they wanted Platter to hold possession up and get Conte on the break, they could. But yeah, defensively, they haven't really found the system. They've switched to more of a conventional back four. They're trying really hard to protect whilst doing all the interesting attacking things that we see from them. But yeah, they seem a little bit lost. They haven't really found the system or the personnel that works for them. We you know, there's so much that Florent Muslia can do, but when you lose guys like Schallenberg, Julian Justvan, we mentioned Pieringer, three key pillars of what Paderborn want to do, and what they achieved last season, and they haven't really been able to replace them with this similar quality. You have this. Now, obviously, we don't want to go too far ahead because we've only played 5 games of a 34-game season. But, yeah, there's a lot to work on. I think the intensity of the way they want to play as well needs a bit of improving. But, you know, well, let's give them a little bit more time before we jump the ship on whether they're in trouble. They do have Wiesbaden on Friday night when we return from the international break at home. And yeah, look, you know, they've struggled at home as well this season. Paderborn and Wiesbaden are no easy beats. Kiel are going to be playing St. Pauli on Sunday when we return from the break, which should actually be a really interesting northern clash. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our group 3 games with the aforementioned Van Wiesbaden hosting Schalke. Is the temperature rising in Gelsenkirchen? After only one win in their opening 4 games, the pressure was on Schalke to get a result against newly promoted Van Wiesbaden. It's been a good start to the season for Wiesbaden. Wins including against Hertha BSC, for example, they felt that they could be in the hunt for another giant killing. So, would they? Well, it was a tough game. Very physical, both sides trying not to give too much away. And the first half was one of here and there. It wasn't exactly the kind of game that would get regular game time on the conference, for example. And as such, it was 0-0 at the break. But the goals did come in the second half. Substitute Derry John Merkin, who was signed before the end of the window, he puts an excellent ball in for Tobias Moore, who was completely left unmarked. And yeah, great cross, good goal. And yeah, 1-0 for Schalke. They had their chances to make it 2 through Danny Latzer. Keke Top had an opportunity. But one thing that felt really noticeable was the indecisiveness in the final third for Schalke. Almost not sure of themselves. They're a bit so-so. They just don't. There's just no confidence in the team. And for the dominance that they had throughout the game, as we mentioned with St. Pauli, if you just don't put your chances away, they had 15 in total in this game. You invite the pressure. You invite the pressure of a team that really has nothing to lose like Wiesbaden. And then you create situations like the one that led in the 95th minute where it was a tantalizing cross into the box from Heuser, who, you know, he's been really good this season for Wiesbaden. He's an absolute midfield beast. And, you know, whether Wiesbaden or not stay in the Zweite Bundesliga or not, he would be someone that I would want. I'd be looking at if I was a Zweite Bundesliga team for next season, but that's, you know, that's a long way away. His cross, you know, shot comes in. Henning Matriciani, it commits what could only be described as a cardinal sin when clearing it. Now, it's obviously difficult to know where to clear the ball when the shot's coming at you, but he kicks the ball. His initial clearance option for him in his head was to go down the middle, which is just unbelievable. Not sure why you want to kick the ball into traffic. And his clearance cannon into Max Reinthaler, who had already denied a goal-scoring opportunity for Schalke midway through the second half through Thomas Hovland. He's the benefactor, and they almost stole it in the end. Ivan Pretayen had an effort just a minute later, but his effort went over the crossbar, and Wiesbaden get a point. And I think a fair point in the end. You know, they've shown to be really hard to break down defensively. Schalke didn't really have many good quality opportunities, and when they did, they really didn't make the most of them. The best chance was obviously the Moore goal, but Ovrian's effort, Latza hitting the post, were the better chances. They, you could tell Wiesbaden putting the work on Tirota. Tirota really didn't have any influence on the game, and as such was subbed out in the second half. So yeah, it's really dire for Schalke. It's not great for Schalke at the moment. You can sense there's a bit of tension within the team. You know, we saw Ralf Fährmann, who was almost on his way to Borussia Mönchengladbach at the end of the window. He was suspended internally by Thomas Reis, and yeah, it's just not a happy environment. They're still trying to it's clear that they haven't really been able to figure out how to make this team the best it can possibly be. And I know we've only played 5 games into the season, but they just, they're obviously, they play really narrow, as last week's guest, Abel Mesros, mentioned. They're not particularly quick out wide. We did see a start for Kazuki, and he was serviceable, but not impactful, hence why he was yanked at halftime. They almost seem really predictable in when they enter the offensive zone. You know, we know they want to go to Tirota, and they need to diversify that a little bit to be a bit more dangerous. Look what Hamburg produce, and it's probably also the system conducive to the players in the squad doesn't fit. I think 5 games in, we've seen that it's very problematic, and they get destroyed in transition. We see. So Wiesbaden were able, when they got on top in the game, which was late on, the transitions were way too easy. They were able to bypass the midfield, and they had great opportunities to get the goal. And look, the goal was coming, even if the opportunities hadn't been high quality from Wiesbaden prior to that. They really made it. They made a difference. They defended well. You'd expect that from a Marcus Kalczynski coach side. Madison was brilliant in this game as well. It's just another missed opportunity for Schalke, and it just doesn't get easier. This league is hard. We know it's hard. Magdeburg, St. Pauli, and Paderborn are your next three. You're not feeling particularly confident, especially the way they're playing, the way they're being opened up in the transition game. Mind blown. But let's talk about Wiesbaden, because Wiesbaden were they dug in, they had to be astute defensively. They got a little bit lucky at times. but they're dangerous when they go forward. Pretayen is someone who's more than capable at this level. Sometimes a bit wasteful, but he gets it. He's really good at getting into strong offensive areas. And he provides his teammates an option to aim for in the box. He does that very, very well. And yeah, look, they've shown early. Whether it's sustainable, who knows? But the opening 5 games would give a lot of promise for Marcus Kalczynski, especially in their effort to avoid relegation. One more thing, it's good to see John Iredale, a friend of the podcast, and get back into action. He's had a pretty rotten run of injuries over his career, and it was good to see him get on the pitch and enjoy playing. So yeah, they've got Paderborn, and then they've got Elversberg, and then they're at Hanover to end the month of September. Let's make our way to Fürth. Greuther Fürth hosted Hanover on yesterday, if you're listening to this on Monday. Stefan Leitl, of course, returning to Fürth, where team he led to promotion and the Bundesliga. And he was desperate. He was desperately looking to get one over his former employers. And boy, they were under pressure a lot. I think, Fürth had tons of opportunities. But the one thing that Hanover did quite well in this game was they were super efficient. 6 shots on goal, leading in to 3 total goals. And they opened the scoring just 16 minutes in. An excellent interchange between Yannick Diem and Harvard Nielsen. Back to Diem, who whips in an excellent ball to Nikola Trasoldi. And Trasoldi, with a first-time effort, beating Jonas Urbik at the near post. Sensational football. Great triangle work. Exactly the stuff you would teach on the training ground. And brilliant off-the-ball running and a brilliant goal. 6 minutes later, they made it 2. Trasoldi, this time the assistee. he lays the ball off to Derek Kuhn, and you could expect Kuhn to maybe put in a cross or cut the ball back, but he just lashes it with his left boot and it cannons off the crossbar and into the back of the net. Some say that that crossbar is still rattling to this day. 2-0 at the break, and it, you know, they'd made the most of their chances, whereas Fürth had butchered them, but they would get a goal back. Early in the second half, and this was another contender for goal of the season, there was a few of them on this match day. Julian Green with just hits it from range, and it beats Ron Robert Zieler to make it 2-1, but the deficit of one goal would be reinstated to 2 when Marcel Halstenberg headed home his first goal for Hanover, and the 3 points would be coming back to Hanover with Stefan Leitl. No Alexander Zorniger in the dugout. He was suspended after getting that red card, double yellow against Hertha. Stefan Klein-Heisman was in charge. But it was an interesting one after the third goal was conceded. Azuzi, who's the sporting director, and Zorniger having an interesting conversation. I'm not much of a lip reader, but it didn't seem like they were particularly happy with the set-piece defending for the third goal. Good result for Hanover in the grand scheme of things. They've won 2 of their last 3 games, and they enter the international break in 7th. What a contrast it's been for Fürth. They win that 5-0 opening day match against Paderborn, but since then they've lost 3 of their last 4 games and enter the international break in 16th. Defensively, catastrophic. Offensively as well, grossly inefficient. They've only scored twice in their last 4 games, which is problematic. They're persistent with Lempoli, who's he's fine. Sabeni and Hogota as a 3, but Hogota's playing as a number 10 behind it. It doesn't seem like they have the same sort of flexibility that you would have with an Abiyama or an Armindo Sieb. Sieb came on in the second half. Abiyama not in the matchday squad. So, there's a fundamental shift. They move to a back 4 as well. Normally, we've seen them play with the back 5 with the 2 wide players. Abiyama did play, actually. It's not working at the moment. They seem to be giving up quality opportunities. And teams are converting them. Hertha scored 5 against them the week before, and that we felt that was a false economy of Hertha. But perhaps the 5-0 win against Paderborn was very much a false reasoning of what we could expect from Fürth, because since then they've really struggled to be effective. They know how to get into great areas. They had plenty of opportunities in this game. They outshot. They outshot Hanover, 19-6 in this game, but only 2 really what you consider big opportunities on the goal. The rest of them were quite wasteful, and Zieler didn't have a whole lot to do, just inefficient, and it's hard to win games when you don't make the most of your chances. It's great for Hanover. They made the most of it. It's been a big week for them. They've made a bunch of signings before the end of the window in, Mohamed Demar, which was mentioned last week, but also Andreas Vogelsammer joining from Millwall, has plenty of experience at this level with Arminia Bielefeld, but also played for Union Berlin in the Bundesliga, as well as Christopher Scott as well. So they feel really good. The mix is there. One of the better midfield performances we've seen from them, playing Kunze and Leopold. Christiansen and Bushushkov are both injured. So, yeah, I think it's a much more interesting mix. They can get the ball forward. Lots to like. And even though that they were under a lot of pressure, I thought the Hanover defence was quite good as well. Halstenberg had a very good game, his best one for Hanover, in my opinion, this season. And things are on the up. You feel confident about where Hanover are slowly going towards now. Can they be a bit more dangerous in the offensive third? You probably think they can, but the good thing for them and the comfort for Stefan Leitl is knowing that in the 6 shots on goal they had, 5 of them were on target and 3 of them ended in goals. And at the end of the day, the only statistic that matters is the scoreline, and they won the game 3-1. And finally, to round off match day five, let's head off to Osnabrück. Osnabrück hosting Elversberg, the battle of the two promoted sides from last season. This game ended a goal to nil, thanks to Vahad Fekir. An excellent ball in from Paul Varner, who they'd signed on loan from Bayern. The 17-year-old came on as a sub and had a really important impact throughout the game. And his assist was in the end the difference for the fellow substitute in Fekir. Look, this was an important game for both sides. Neither had secured a victory throughout the opening four games of the season. Elversberg were coming off that 5-0 defeat at home to Fortuna Düsseldorf. Osnabrück had been in a few games. They were quite competitive against Paderborn. And their previous two home games, they'd lost 3-2. So for both sides, defensively improved. They limited the amount of key chances. If you can see the XG from FODMOB, it's quite low. Osnabrück just over, 1.07. Expected goals for Elversberg was 0.94. But I was really impressed with what Osnabrück did early. They Kwasi Riet was lively, but was inefficient. Like, they would get him into decent areas, but he just couldn't hold the ball up. He'd lose possession, then he'd foul. Engelhardt was fine. I was really, really liked what Elversberg did in the second half. Jakobsen was great in midfield, really, controlled the tempo of the game, got Elversberg really on top. And, the substitutes were impactful. Pinkert, Fekir, and Varner in particular made significant contribution to changing the game in favour for Elversberg. And look, they'll be happy for a number of reasons. A, it's the first time they haven't conceded a goal. They have kept the clean sheet this season for Nikola Kristoff, which is a big, big, big win for them. They beat a team that, is a very strong offensive threat at home. Elversberg get to create history. It's their first ever win in the Zweite Bundesliga. And they deserved it. Even though, Osnabrück had chances late, Christian Conte had a great opportunity before the end of the 90, but it was a pretty tame effort and saved by Kristoff. So, yeah, I think they deserve their victory. They were, they made the most of their opportunities, and the goal scored, we already mentioned it was a cracking ball, but it was horribly defended. I think it was Rorik who just completely lost Fekir. Osnabrück's defensive shape was a bit all over the place, and that's kind of been the problem for them all season, because they've really struggled defensively, and just another goal conceded. So Osnabrück will enter the international break in 18th, 1 point, the only side yet to win this season, whereas Elversberg climb out of the bottom three and will be in 15th. So Elversberg welcome Hamburg to the Kaiserlinde, which, we'll see what kind of footballing style Horst Steffen wants to play. Hopefully he's going to implement more of the aggressive and really take it up to Hamburg and doesn't really settle. We did see them play with a back three for the first time this season. For Frederik Jäkel was really good leading that defensive three with Konrad and Sickinger, but then Sickinger was taken off for Antonich. So yeah, lots to like about what Elversberg are doing. They're a bit under where they should be. I think they've had a few games where they've been fantastic, but they really built into this game. They weathered the storm from Osnabrück and eventually took advantage, and they were worthy winners. So let's see how they do against Hamburg when we return. Osnabrück, they're at Hanover on Sunday. That will be quite a tricky task for them. But yeah, they've got the tools to take it up to Hanover. It's just whether they can make the most of it. It's clear that in the final third, the final third's a bit of an issue. But defensively, Jamfi and Weimann have been known to make mistakes that have conceded goals. They haven't really found the mix yet. And it's, you want to enter the midpoint of the season having a fair understanding of what you've got in terms of player personnel and how you can fit. Interesting to see they signed Mikael Cuisance as well. That was odd. He's had a pretty interesting career from Gladbach to Bayern Munich to Marseille, Venezia, Sampdoria, and now Osnabrück. It's been quite the player arc. We'll see if he can improve that midfield mix, which I think is pretty solid. It's just, defensively, can this team improve? We'll see. That's it from me. Thank you for joining me. I know it's a bit different to have a bit of a solo podcast, and thank you for enduring all the coughing. I do apologize, but we're still trying to get back to 100% full fitness. We'll be back in a fortnight's time to discuss all of the action from match day 6, so we hope you enjoy your international break, and we'll see you soon when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.